When they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
A waitress, rather, call the police. And she was mistaken in 90210 for
cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that Dean cake. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here?
Oh, at least there's one person on this ricotta set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him. I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, Larry, we are back here on the Beverly Hills 90210 show for the continuation of Strike the Match, The Big Hurt. And I'm really excited to get into this. We have a very special guest joining us in a few. Larry, I understand that you got to do a little Mean Gene Okerlund of boxing this past week. Do you want to explain what you were doing in a boxing ring?
I have a friend who is turning 88, who still boxes in a kind of a famous gym, the 18th Street Gym. And for his birthday, he didn't want to have a party, but it's almost like a boxing fantasy camp, because he hangs out with a lot of people in the boxing industries. He wanted to basically imagine he was having a media workout and being signed by 360 Promotions, which has, they promoted like Triple G and the Klitschko's, and it's a really big time. And he was going to be interviewed by the editor-in-chief of Ring Magazine, who's also one of our friends. And we staged this whole thing. I kind of did the in-ring announcing and tried to be as big and as colorful as the Buffer Brothers. And it was a great event. It was so much fun. And he got in the ring and did a 1 minute round. He did also. It's unbelievable what he's doing with his hands at that age. And yes. God bless. It was kind of fun. Before we get to too far away, there's no more news about David Gale, right?
That has now subsided. Thank you for bringing that up. I don't know if you saw, but we were everywhere alongside of that information.
I know.
Which I did not intend. But anyway, at any rate, the final information was cardiac arrest, and that's what happened with David Gale. Sadly, we lost a friend of this podcast. His family lost a family member and a friend. He was a kind, wonderful human. And I told you when we did the live restream, he said he was so happy that we found him. He lit up when he was sharing those stories about Aaron Spelling and Duke. The Duke Vincent story is just so great. I think he'll be, he's going to be greatly missed. I mean, you enjoyed when he was here.
I totally, it was just, we're devastated. He was a young guy with a young child who, during the interview, was just jumping up and down in the background, photobombing the whole interview.
Yeah.
No, it's just a terrible thing. And I don't know. So they've ruled out now that it was not an accidental overdose?
Yeah. And the family said that they have no reason to believe that it was
anything. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm really relieved about that. That it would matter. But
no. But I know, and it's sad, though, Larry, because I do believe he was planning on coming back to LA and wanted to get things going again. So he was so talented. He was such a talented guy, but the industry
was blessed
is
with a good, beautiful look, and he had a lot of things going. Anyway,
It's a very tough industry. You know what I mean? 1 minute you're on an Aaron Spelling show, the next minute nobody wants to return your phone call. You know what I mean? So it's unfortunate. That's the way it goes, right?
I think I know.
All right, here is an ad. We're going to come back with Brian and Spider One.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Check out all the latest rad stuff from the Beverly Hills 90210 show shop. They have everything you could possibly imagine. So, go there now, okay?
Okay, Brian is here, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, it's good to see you. how's all in your world?
What was that?
I'm just waiting. How is all in your world? I'm sorry. I'm waiting for Spider to get back in his seat. Oh. I see that he's not in his seat yet. So,
well, yeah. I'm sure we'll come back soon.
Yes. How is all in your world? Is everything going well?
Good. A little stressful, but, you know, I'm taking everything one step at a time. I just started school again, so I'm balancing everything out right now.
Okay.
What are you studying, Brian?
Psychology.
Oh, good.
Larry, let's talk about The Big Hurt.
The Big Hurt was written by Larry Mullen and directed by Frank Thackeray, who I really had to scratch my head because I have no memory of him at all. When I looked him up, he was a cinematographer, basically. And this show just screams double up, meaning we were doing two shows at a time. We probably just had to reach deep into the director, you know, well, to see what we could find. And this guy came in there, and he does an all right thing. It's not inspiring, especially toward the last fifth of the movie. I'm a little bit unhappy with him places. If I was Chuck, I would be like yelling at the time, but I didn't.
Larry, this is a very interesting thing. I have two promos for this episode. So when you see the first promo, you'll understand why there was two.
Okay, one second, because this aired on Wednesday. Here we go.
You're gonna say what the promo is gonna say.
This was the first of Sweeps episodes.
From tonight on a brand new 90210.
Time for you to move. You need me, Kelly. You're not staying here anymore, all right? Put down the phone.
Wow. What did you think of that one?
It looked a little too gratuitous.
Okay, but well, I mean, for me, I would be like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I want to know more about this. I don't know if this is the one we just watched or...
Bad women are already too.
How do you plead? Guilty, Your Honor.
It's going to kill.
In Venice, will serve a minimum 2-year sentence in the state.
Someone tells me Kelly's new roommate's got a couple of stories loose.
Tell the phone.
Kelly faces the most terrifying
Now that's wow.
That's really good, but I'm amazed they didn't throw in the Donna stuff, or maybe the old man kind of nixed it.
Well, I want to get to that. No. So let's bring on our friend Spider One from Power Man 5000.
Yes,
how are you?
Sorry about the. I had to find some technology from I think the year this episode aired to make this work.
Oh man, it's so good to have you here, dude. How are you?
Yeah.
You've been doing you've been doing a lot of things since 90210, which is really exciting.
Yes. A lot of things since then. I mean, this was like, it's crazy when you asked me to do this. I'm like, how much of this is going to be actual things that happened or just perceived memory that I made up over the last 30 years, you know? But I will do my best to remember things.
Well, let me ask you this, though. How did you get in the world of 90210? There's a lot of conflicting stories about this. The actress Christina Lise, who played Emily Valentine on 90210, said on a post that her and Jason had a label and you were signed to that label. How did this happen for you? Let me just ask you.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened. I mean, her parents, Christine's parents, had a small independent record label in Boston, which is where I started the band. And
was that Curve of the Earth Records?
Curve of the Earth Records, yeah. Whoa. So we were sort of their at the time. We were sort of kind of like local heroes in Boston. We would, you know, we were sort of like the local band, but we had this little record out. This EP that we put out on Curve of the Earth and that we made in like literally in 2 days for like $600, you know, that kind of thing. Super punk rock. And Alvin, who ran the label, who was Christine's stepdad, just basically said, you guys want to be on 90210. And I was like, what? Like, what is the, how is this even a reaction? And he's like, yeah, well, you know, because at the time Christine was in a relationship with Jason, who was, I think,
directing. He was a producer and a director for 90210. Yeah.
So they just, you know, I guess he had a bunch of catalog from the label, and that one resonated with him or somebody, and they asked us to be on. And my initial reaction was Well, thank you. My initial reaction was like, no, like, this is ridiculous. You know, like, we were like this, you know, like, knucklehead Boston band. You know, we need our credibility, you know. And but circumstances would have it. Two things convinced me to do it. One, my then live-in girlfriend had just left me. And I was essentially homeless because I couldn't afford the rent without her. So I was couch hopping. And I believe this was in the winter season. So if anybody knows Boston, it was probably sub-zero and snow up to our knees. And so we're like, well, this sucks. I have nowhere to live. It's the dead of winter. And then my fear was like this, is this too commercial for us? And then somebody said, well, your cramps were up. I know, 2 0.
That's right. Like,
well, if it's cool enough for the cramps, then it's cool enough.
Flaming lips, flaming
yeah,
lips.
So we decided to do it. Yeah, I mean, it was really, I mean, it was kind of funny because they, for such a massive mainstream show, like the musical element was consistently pretty fucking cool, you know? So, and it was the most fun we'd ever had. Like going on that show, I was there. I was in. I don't remember. Where did we shoot that? I don't remember what sound stage was it in Burbank.
Larry,
the Peach Pit After Dark and the swing sets there. You know, the warehouse kind of. You know, the warehouse set there. I'm trying to think. We first saw. We did shoot a little bit in the Peach Pit After Dark. They get thrown out of there, right?
That's right.
And then they shoot.
Well, that's what we shot.
Yeah, I think you shot. We shot on what was our original sound stage. We had sound stage tube, I guess.
And we shot all the
on our lot. You know, one stage over was the porno house, but that was still ours. That one there.
I mean, it was an incredible experience. I'm like, look, I, you know, like I said, we were just these knuckleheads from Boston, and we get flown to LA. You know, of course, the weather is beautiful. Here's your rooms at the Mondrian. Here's your renter car. Here's, and I'm just like, this is not reality. You know, like this is like. So we were about halfway through that shoot, and I was like, I'm moving to LA. Like, that's it. This is where I belong. It's never been that good since, but like I decided to come back. It was also, you know, we were shooting in the Peach Pit After Dark. I'm sorry if I'm jumping around, but.
No, you're good.
And so they're like, okay, bring in the extras, you know. And of course, it's like 50 beautiful 20-year-old girls. Like, I'm like, we're all just. Like, you know, it's every wannabe actress in LA, everyone's a 10. And we were just in heaven. Like, this is the most amazing experience ever. So, yeah. And it's funny because I went back to Boston and essentially packed my bags and moved to LA just because it was such a fun experience.
Larry, you're the one that went through the catalog and found them.
Yes. No, we had the storyline. I needed a band that had a little bit of edge to it to make the storyline work. And I'm trying to remember if Jason came to me with the idea to use his catalog or I had heard about that and I went to him because I was trying to, like, you know, make him love me. And I knew I wanted to help him out too because, you know, I like music. I brought the cramps on. I brought the flaming lips. This is all stuff I brought on. We brought the Rolling Stones on. We got beat up for
Wow.
Jason, that was no good for me. At that time, Jason said, this is what's wrong with the show. You know, I mean, obviously, I had a famous falling out over the Spice Girls.
The
Spice Girls. That was the end of my, I got fired for that. But anyway, neither here nor there.
Hopefully it's not.
But yeah, no, I listened to the catalog. I went, this is perfect. You know, and I was really thrilled you guys agreed to come. I also, you know, love the Boston area, so I was happy to help that. I didn't realize that Jason had the Christy Elise parents connection to the label. I thought he was just out there by himself, you know, because he also was friends with Bare Naked Ladies, who we also had.
Spider's having an internet glitch at the moment. I mean, you know what's great?
I jump back on in a second because my internet is cracking out on you.
Yeah, go back out and then come back in. Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry to ruin your show.
But, no, that's cool. It's cool, man. I'm going to remove you until you get yourself situated.
Well, there you go. I mean, so this is a Christine Leash. You know, it's capitalism.
I figured she, what does Chuck always say about the show and everybody looking out for each other's family members. He has a funny line about that, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, that's, well, the other line is, you know, the famous meme between, I think it was Sam Cohn or the guy from Warner Brothers and Albert Einstein. He said, yeah, I have a theory of relativity too. Don't hire him.
Larry, before he comes back, there's a lot of things happening in this episode. And Brian shared a great photo yesterday on his social media. And of you start to see Tara starting to become more and more unhinged through this episode. And this is one of the places it starts. I pulled this scene, Brian.
Guys?
The awkward family photo.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. Thanks. I want to have something to remember y'all by. Smile! Oh, great. I'd love a copy.
Claire, she doesn't even try to smile. She's definitely not feeling it. She's just like, oh, God. This chick again.
That film could talk. But, you know, actually, what's great about it is because that leads to the darkroom scene with Tara and Brandon. I had totally forgotten that one.
I am going to pull that. But
where she wants to feel like what it feels like to be Kelly and kiss Brandon. I went, oh, that writer is pretty good.
But all of this is happening at the very beginning. This is the other thing.
My fish for me, I forgot. Just a dab. There's a new container on the shelf.
That is not just a dab.
I love the music, though. This completely ominous, horrifying music, and it's just her overfeeding a fish. I love it.
I was thinking that, too. It's Marty Davich was the composer on this one. And yeah, it's a good, you know, it's like, you know, one of those batshit Fatal Attraction, crazy, you know, girl things. And the
spider is back.
Perfect.
Yeah, all right.
Sorry, I apologize for all this.
No, you're good, man. Well, let me ask you this too, because you have lines in this thing. They give you dialogue.
Yeah.
I mean, so did you know that was coming? How did that?
No, hilarious. So yeah, I remember this specifically. They drop off the scripts. I think we're at the hotel. I don't remember who gave us the scripts, whether it was Jason or somebody. And we actually had quite a few lines.
It's dialogue. It's
and
legit.
I wish I could. I actually have the script somewhere. Like, I've saved it after all these years. But I said to whoever it was, I'm like, you gotta cut this dialogue, Luke. We do not want to ruin this show. Like, we are not actors. This is going to be a disaster. Like, we had you know, significant for. So they ended up cutting it. Gave us each, I think, one line. I'm like, okay.
You know, we had some plot there. We had, you know, have the device to have your drummer's girlfriend drop out, so we could have our Donna characters have to step up. So we did need you to pull some weight there.
It was, although I found that maybe it would have been easier with more lines, because it just dropped one line. It was so terrifying. Like, here it comes. I remember my line was like, yeah, I'd like to try that one more time, though. You know, and it was just like so awkward. It's like, I'm like, oh God, this is so bad. I'm so awful at this, you know. But when we first got that script, I was like, please, you got to get rid of some of these lines. We're gonna we're gonna be here all day and ruin your show.
And the thing is that you have you're doing this music video with Tori Spelling. She is all over the video, right? Like, she's gonna be on the car and all this stuff. And I have some of the dailies of this, of you guys. Just chilling and hanging out and just sitting on the car and all this stuff. What was it like to shoot all this stuff for 90210?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I remember, it's funny, I don't remember this. I mean, I remember the car, but I don't remember sitting around. Maybe I didn't realize they were filming us.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
But I remember them. If the live stuff in the Peach Pit, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like they brought in a separate director just for the for the live stuff, like somebody who had experience in music videos and stuff. And
that's very possible. That sounds really possible.
I remember feeling, being really excited about, like, I remember looking back on the footage, like, wow, this looks great, you know? And they, and as you do in TV and film, you shoot enormous amounts of footage you'll never use, you know? So like, we're shooting the whole song, multiple takes, every angle on every band member. And then, you know, it's in the, of course, in the scene for like 3.5 seconds.
Cause that's were you playing live, Spider?
I mean, we're playing to a track. Yeah. I mean, just lip syncing to the track. But what I do remember specifically about the whole set with Tori on the car and I don't know if there might have been fire involved. It was, and I remember sitting there watching this all go down and playing, they're playing the song playback for her to dance to. And I'm just having one of those, how fucking crazy is life? That, you know, again, we made this song. We probably spent $100 making this song. And, you know, probably we tracked it live in some basement studio in Boston. And then you find yourself in LA. I've had a lot of those moments in my life, but that was one of the earliest ones where you're just like realizing how crazy life can be. And if you put yourself out there, the circumstances that you will find yourself in. Because I just thought it seemed like we were just like pranking everyone, like, man, did they realize who we are? Like, we're, you know, like, they should spend a lot of money on this.
But it's also, it's Tori, like, it's Tori fucking Spelling, you know what I mean? It's like, it's 90210 at its core, you know? And then she's on the car and you're sitting there like, what are we doing here? Was Tori cool?
Yeah, everybody was super cool. I mean, I didn't get to meet everyone because we only had scenes with certain people, but I remember Tori being like really cool. Jason, of course, was great to us, and Brian Austin Green, I remember being kind of like, he hung out, I feel like, with us the most, because I also know that he was, I think, I want to say at that point, maybe had started a music career or was trying to start a music career and you know, becoming a rapper, and I think he was very interested in that whole scene and that world. Definitely, like, kind of hanging out with him a bit more than anybody else on set and just talking music and, you know, that kind of stuff.
And did you use any of this for an actual music video?
No. I mean, it was just purely for the show. I don't know if they ever got us the extra footage. I don't ever remember what happened. We never used it. I don't think we'd have the rights to use it. I do have you guys can answer the question on this, is occasionally I'll see these two episodes, because I don't think I've seen the episode since it aired, but like occasionally you'll see 90210 streaming on a platform, and these episodes will be missing. And I often wonder if it's like a music licensing thing, like they didn't re-up the license for the song or something.
Yeah, really, it's a sore spot for us because we're trying to get the companies to do the right thing. Yeah, it's all about music licensing, but they're really just too lazy and too cheap to renegotiate, you know.
Yeah.
It's a valuable property to them, and they're disrespectful to the fans. And, you know, it's just.
I'm curious, Spider, did anybody ever come to you and say they would like to re-up or license this music again? Or have you never been contacted about this?
No, I mean, no, not at all. And you got to realize this was a song that was on a really small label, no publishing deal. I mean, it would be very simple. I mean, I own the publishing to the song, so they would just have to say, you want it? And I'd be like, sure.
Yeah, I would say, like, it's too lazy. They're just too lazy.
It's not even a money thing. I wouldn't even care. You know, it's like, whatever. Like,
yes.
Keep it on the, you know.
We just resolved that one here, Larry. We have solved one of the music, two of the episodes we've just solved.
I mean, this is my contention all the time. They're just too lazy to make that call. I mean, look, some things like knocking on heaven's door maybe require a negotiation. You have to put some money down. But, you know, you're making money. We know we're making money. Chuck knows we're making money because he's a profit participant. And his profits have gone up.
Here's some more stuff.
So young.
Do you remember doing all this on this screen with the fire and all this? Like, do you remember these cutaways?
Vaguely, but this footage is awesome. I'd love to get
some. Oh, I'll send you the whole.
I saved this because at the time I said, oh, I should save this.
It's so great. Yeah, it's a time capsule. I mean, that's why ultimately we wanted to do the show, and they asked us. I mean, they paid us. Like, that was cool. You know, like, we were still like a fledgling band that,
you know. Did you get paid well to do this?
I remember being very happy with what we got paid, but then again, we were a band that was making probably $0 back then, so anything seemed exciting. You know what I mean? But I remember, I mean, you know, it's a film and television, at least on the, you know, comparatively to the where we were at that time in music, was really just starting out. I mean, it's a different.
Did you get a bump in sales from the show?
I was going to ask.
I don't think it really made a difference. Maybe. I mean, people would certainly ask us about it. You know, a lot of people saw it, but it didn't seem to like directly affect any like success for us. You know, that came much later. Well, not much later, but like a few years later, just by getting a deal and putting a record out and stuff like that. But yeah, that was another like unknown factor when doing this. You know, you're on a show that millions of people are watching.
Well, yeah, you probably had 12 million people watching at least.
How does it translate to that audience? Does anybody notice? Does anybody care?
Flaming Lips always talks about it. It was a big bump for them, they always say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about the Cramps. I'm sure it was gave them great exposure.
It could certainly be the audience hated us, and that could have been it, you know. So we were at the heart of so much turmoil between these characters.
Well, let me ask you, the artist of you, the rock and roll guy of you, when you hear that the one character is going to have an issue with the video and go at her about what she's wearing and all this stuff, are you like, what are they doing? Or are you like totally in that they used your song in a way that was such a big part of the two episodes?
I mean, I thought it was amazing that they based like a two episode arc, you know, kind of around this storyline. That was pretty exciting. I mean, the idea that the boyfriend would be jealous and uncomfortable, I think is completely realistic. Like, I think that happens all the time. You know, I do think the alternate ending should have been that Donna is just fed up with the drama and just hops on the tour bus with the band and takes off, you know what I mean, and sells t-shirts. But, you know, I think that would have been a cool way to end it.
That's probably a realistic way that it ends as well, isn't it?
It happens that way. Yeah. I like that. She joins the circus.
But I mean, I think, I love the scene that when they're like screening the video for all their friends and everyone just kind of hates it, you know. So like, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's like, kind of sucks, you know. I'm like, wow, this is some real supportive friends you got there, you know.
Yeah, Joe's got notes on the video. Yeah, man.
I love how comparatively to like, you know, Cardi B or something now, how tame. You know, like he's so upset that she's just, exploiting herself like that. You know,
I gotta say, Tori
goes by themselves by their virginity,
but yeah. Tori goes for it in this. You know what I mean? Like some of the stuff that's happening on the car, she's doing splits and she's, you know, playing for the camera. She looks so good doing all of this. It's interesting to see that character who's a virgin on the show doing all of those sort of like fun things.
Larry, did Aaron ever say anything about this? You know, did you guys ever get any pushback?
Never got any pushback because, you know, as long as she was still a virgin, that's just season six, she still was a virgin for another whole year. No, and he still wanted to keep her a virgin. But yeah, this was kind of so in keeping because, you know, Tori and herself, not Donna the character, but Tori, you know, was a pretty wild club girl in those days. So she, you know, she knew her way around the dance floor. And so, yeah, it just was a good marriage. She wore those collect clothing really well. And it was a kind of a, you know, this is how I dreamt this whole storyline up. And it kind of really, it was the perfect song for it, frankly. So I thank you for it. It just had that kind of edge and new, you know, and again, Brian, for the David and Donna characters, their first video. And it's just, you know, it was pretty good. It gave us a simple design thing, The Last Woman on Earth. So, you know, you got a little bit of.
Where did you write Strike the Match? What do you remember about writing or coming up with Strike the Match?
Yeah, good question. I mean, this was so long. I mean, I think we wrote this. That song came out, like I said, on an little EP we made, and it was released in like 1994. So this was a long time ago. Like any memories of like sitting down and writing this song are long gone. but I do remember where we recorded it. And like I said, it was, I mean, it was like as low budget as you could get. I mean,
We had no money. We had no, and Alvin, who ran the record label, was also a co-owner of this recording studio. So we got a good deal in there, but it was not, you know, we weren't recording it like, you know, Capitol Records. It was like in the basement of a rehearsal space and, you know, a little 16 track board, you know, it was punk rock. You know what I mean? I mean, we were always like, I mean, look, even through success and signing to DreamWorks Records and having Platinum Record, we were always very, at least I was always a DIY punk rock attitude, do it all yourself. You know, it's still to this day with the music and with, you know, transitioned into film and stuff. And it's always, I mean, it's just that punk rock spirit has never left me, you know? So
that's awesome.
How we start. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you guys on tour? What are you doing now? Like, where can people come see you? And do you play Strike the Match on tour?
No, I haven't. We haven't played that in probably since back then. It would be interesting to dust that one off and see if.
I think so, man.
Look, we have continued on. We ended up years ago. With them, they since folded the label. Now they're just, you know, DreamWorks was always like the movie studio, TV production, and music, and they folded the label in like 2004 or something. But continued on making records, touring the country. We're going on tour in March. You know, we just still tour. I've always had a deep love of film and television as much as music, and I had a TV show that I created and executive produced. It was on MTV for a year called Death Valley. That was in like 2012. And since I've written and directed three feature films. And we have a indie production company to make films. So just constantly creating, constantly doing stuff. And yeah. Just,
dude, that's really awesome.
And I owe it all to being on 90210. It made me want to go to LA and
where are you now? Are you in Boston still?
Sorry, I lost.
Are you in LA or are you in Boston?
Uh-oh. He's in suspended animation.
Currently is in a pause.
Sorry, guys. You keep breathing on me.
Simon says, love Power Man 5000. Rediscovered their records since the last show. Listening to them 24/7 at the moment. The first EP especially. They still release great stuff, by the way. Thank you for that.
Simon is a musician from Austria.
Yeah. We were wondering if are you out here in LA or are you in Boston? It's a difficult question. Are you in LA?
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm in LA now. I moved to LA in 97 and have been here ever since. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Spider, we're going to say goodbye. Thank you so much for your time here. People can follow you at Powerman 5000.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my internet or your something's happening.
Something is definitely happening. Powerman 5000's on Instagram. They're going back on tour in March. It's really exciting. Thank you for being here, man. Much appreciated.
Like the match.
All right, Larry, let's get into some more of the things that are happening now.
I just want to do a check. Is Jerry Frizzell anywhere near?
No.
No. Okay.
He's in the cloud.
Jerry is the editor of this this episode. One of one of our trio of really good editors. And I'd hope he would drop in, but I guess so far so bad. Anyways, great to see Spider.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
And it confirmed up the story. The story actually worked. You know, basically, you know, I reviewed the catalog and picked them, but they had been signed by you know, look, Jason became an owner of Curve the Records because through Christy Elise is a connection with them.
But this is, this is such a great way of finding a punk rock band. First of all, props to Christina Elise. Because she probably told Jason this would be a great band. You got to get him on the show. I mean, she's probably championing them.
No one told me I should take Power Man 5000. That much I know. I just had to go through the whole catalog. And
that's the one that you picked.
Yeah, because it was going to serve the story the best. You know, we knew
the story. Charlie, I am the one telling you what to do. All right, fine.
Oh, boy.
What do you want to do?
I pulled very short clips this week, Larry, so that we don't need any drama on this end.
Make sure YouTube doesn't, pull us off.
I wanted to ask you, Larry, remember when Tara was with us, or Paige Moss was with us, she said she was not allowed to point the gun at Jenny Garth. Was that a rule that you, who would set that rule? Why would that rule?
Well, that would be a rule on, it just probably was Jenny mentioned that to the AD, and so they just stressed it, probably. I would say that would be true. Because she's not comfortable. It wasn't necessary to do that. So it was all right.
What I'm wondering is
it wasn't that much concern. It wasn't like in no way was that a hot gun. And I'm sure we had an armor on the set who was professional until I gave the actor and said this is a cold gun. And the actor just did his job, which is what actors are supposed to do when they're on set. That's why I hate the Alec Baldwin thing, because he was an actor at that point. He's worried about his performance. He's not thinking about the guy told him it's a cold gun.
Well, that's why I'm disturbed, and I don't mean to get into the whole thing here, but I'm disturbed and bothered by that story because there's not much that Alec Baldwin could have done. What it mean? He just comes to set. He has no idea. It's cold.
As a producer, he's liable for civil charges.
Sure, certainly. Sure.
But for hiring bad people. But as an actor there performing his function, he's just, he's rehearsing basically. He's working. He was told this thing by somebody.
It almost feels like a setup. And so it feels like a setup.
I don't like the precedent of it. I don't want to get on a sidetrack here. Yeah, this whole thing, you got charged again. It is a little bit of a witch hunt. I hate to say
it. Oh, it is a fucking witch hunt. Sorry to add that.
I feel bad. I'm not a giant fan of his, but I actually I did work with him as an early actor. I told you my Alec Baldwin story, right?
No, share the Alec Baldwin story.
Oh, God, really? We're going to do this right now?
Yeah, why not? We're live.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This is going to be this. Okay. This is now 1982, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I'm the story editor. I like to be called creative consultant on a show. It's a CBS series called Cutter to Houston, about a small hospital in Cutter, Texas, which was connected to Houston with a helicopter. And there was a doctor, there are three doctors, and he was one of them. He was a guy who had been busted for cocaine and now was kind of doing community service in Houston. He was from the big city. And I had written an episode, which was fantastic, of course. It was like we had to get the rare blood to the hospital through the hurricane, okay? The girl, the charming girl that Alec Baldwin meets, who's like gives Alamo tours, just she's great. She like pretends she's related to Davy Crockett, a little bit of romance while she's, there's been a big wreck. I'm sorry, she needs blood badly. We need this rare blood type to come in from Houston and through the hurricane. And so she's got to go into surgery before the blood arrives. It's just no way. And so I wrote this scene, which I just thought was so good. She sees him there, and I describe it as she kind of, he's like right over there. And she kind of reaches up and kind of rolls her little finger around one of his chest hairs, just to kind of not quite kiss, but just to kind of be real close. So I get a call, go down to the set immediately. This is, so 98, I go down the set and I said, you have to apologize to Alec Baldwin in front of the whole set. He's totally humiliated. I had no idea. He's very hairy and he's very sensitive about this.
Oh my God.
He was a nobody coming out of soap opera. It was his first network.
And so you had to apologize to Alec
in front of the whole set, like another WWE.
Well, wait, but you've never told that story here. I'm sorry, we're in a tangent, but you never told that story here on the air where you had to apologize in front of the entire
unlike Ric Flair,
nobody knows this one either. You had to apologize to the entire WWE locker room.
twice in England, one day after the other, once to Ric Flair, once to Booker T. Jones, because I gave the script to the wrong black guy. We had no secretaries. They were going shorthanded.
What's the Ric Flair one?
Oh, the Ric Flair on the script, I spelled his name wrong. I spelled his name with a K.
And somebody from WWE.
Stephanie fucking, she really was pissed off.
Stephanie McMahon comes up
to you. Well, the greatest wrestler in sports entertainment history, incorrectly. You have to apologize to everyone in this company.
I love that Stephanie impression.
And then the next day, I had to do it again. Because, and I apologize to Booker D. Jones and Michael Hayes, to bless his soul, said, how would he know there were no black characters on 90210?
That's a great line.
Everyone laughed. And, you know, Michael Hayes was a prince among men. He was great. I think he's probably still creative there now.
I think he is.
Oh, yeah. He's a lifer.
He's a character.
He was a lifer.
That Alec Baldwin thing, I mean, if you're sensitive about the chest hair, just shave it. I don't know. Get a wax.
I'm sitting in my writer's room. I'm imagining this close scene. I don't want him to really kiss because I only really known him for a couple of days, but I want it to be like breaths mingling, you know?
Did Ric Flair accept your apology?
Rick did. He was gracious. He said, come on. He was embarrassed by the whole thing.
Like, what are we talking about? Here's someone who gets embarrassed. Watch this.
Talks about you all the time.
Oh, well, we're old friends.
I don't mean like that. She's still in love with you. She says she'll never get over you.
You know, Tara, I don't think you and I should be talking about this. Oh, hey.
Oh, Brandon, he is not with it.
But what I love that Susan Keith says, your friend is here.
Yeah.
And she says it in a way where it's like, your friend is here. But he doesn't pick up on it and then she's got the haircut. So how would he know? It looks just sort of like Kelly.
You know, it's a wacky storyline. A lot of times I'll say, you know, it's 32 hours, so we needed a lot of content. So, and I think, we just kind of played it out full. And Paige, to her credit, really does a wonderful job. We probably should have given her a buzz to see if we get her back on.
I texted her. She didn't respond to my text. It was very... Yeah.
It might have been a one-time thing. Well, at least she came
home. She did. You know, from what I remember, we had a while to get her here. It took us some time to get her. So, I mean, I just want to say her performance in this is really great. And when she was on our show, she was so kind and so fun and funny about all of this, you know, and she just enjoyed every moment of it.
Yeah, because I mean, she was very inexperienced when this happened. We just kind of, you know, liked the kind of, you know, just she was just the casting was just kind of we hit the dynamite on that one. We hit the jackpot.
Oh, totally. Let's see what this is. Oh wait, hold up. We'll save that one. I have this is also going on in the background of everything.
Maintain employment and keep his social and family connections intact.
No.
No.
Oh, God.
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
I said no. You and Mr. Cramey have concocted this deal, but I'm not bound by it. This defendant put more than a dozen law enforcement officers' lives at risk, as well as a countless number of innocent citizens during a high-speed flight from justice. And that's becoming all too familiar in this town. It's time we sent a message.
Judge is great.
Bill, it's all LA news is about is the freaking car chases. I mean, I remember, you know, I said, no, what we're going to do. We're going to do a real LA institutional thing. This is what we're doing. The car chase. It was great. I mean, for, you know, it got us Colin on the run, which we wanted. And, you know, we knew he was on his way out. We kind of had written him into a corner, unfortunately. But, you know,
Brian, do you get car chase coverage up in your area?
Not so much in the Bay Area, no, but
I'm sorry to hear that.
I have a friend of mine who's an anchor man in Tucson, and I was at a wedding. I said, I was telling him about the car chase thing. Everything is always every night is pretty much breaking news a car chase.
I wish.
And he said, I said, do you have this thing? He says, no, we show your car chases.
I wish it was every night. I love a car chase. I don't know what it is. I'm so excited. It's probably your fault from Chips. You know what I mean? Like all of that stuff that I grew up watching, like the high speed chases and stuff in those kinds of shows. And now I love it in real life. Okay. There was a question here, Larry. Mm-hmm. Wasn't Shelley Hack on that?
Yes, Shelley Hack. And the other guy was, I can't remember the other guy, James something or other. And there's some other good character actors on Noble Willingham and, some other interesting people. It lasted a half a year.
Catherine West says Paige is amazing. It could have been so cheesy, but she built it so well.
Yeah, she did. It spoke to her. The magic.
Renee says Val's face there was so expressive there. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Tiffany Thiessen. Happy birthday.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and the pictures of Tiffany are just awesome. I'm feeling very warm toward Tiffany. I don't know why.
I'm feeling it, too, but I don't feel the warmth back, Larry.
There's no warmth back, but we got to keep trying. I mean, there's just no reason why this gal should not celebrate Valerie Malone. That should be part of her thing.
She's an incredible...
Anyway, she's really good in this episode. I like the fact that her and Colin have this relationship here. And, yeah, I mean, Jason Wild is another guy we can't get on the show, so it's kind of odd.
Oh, I know. You know, you never know why things don't work out like that.
I make up reasons, but...
I do. I make up reasons, too. We talked about doing an episode of the Patreon where we make up reasons why people haven't come on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's just rumors and innuendos.
Hey, so the other thing that's going on in this scenario, so storyline, this episode is Joe is really upset about Donna's doing all this stuff with the Power Man 5000 video. And
well, also with David, the working with David. So again, to give Joe a little bit of a break here, it's, you know, all of a sudden now Donna's working with her old boyfriend. He's got her now gyrating like she's at a strip bar and really skippy stuff. And I think it's kind of cool. They try to like tone the video down, but the record company doesn't want it.
The record company guy, I don't know who that actor is, but he's wonderful. I buy it.
We keep hold of him.
Yeah. You know, because he's there till the end of the season.
What's his last name? I think it's a funny, I said one of my friends. Let me see. What's his last name? Roger?
I don't know. But anyway, in terms of... Donna and Joe, you do inevitably reconcile his problems and redeem Joe by the end of the episode. And I have to say, if Donna wasn't going to wind up with David, I really would have liked to see her wind up with Joe Bradley, because this scene, first of all, Cameron is so wonderful in the scene I'm about to show. And I think there's just something really beautiful between these two characters.
Joe, look. The changes that they want us to make. It's all the stuff that you wanted me to take out. And unless we put it back in, they're not going to buy it.
Well, I guess that's showbiz.
I thought you'd be really upset.
No. No, I've had some time to think about it, and I'm actually a little embarrassed. How I handled things. When it comes right down to it, I think what was really bugging me was how much time you're spending with David. I'm jealous, Donna. You guys have things together that you and I will never have.
There's nothing to be jealous of.
And my head knows that, but my heart's not getting the message.
Well, I could put my arms around you right now, but I know that wouldn't make a difference. You just have to believe me. Believe in us.
Well, how about if I put my arms around you?
Oh, that feels good.
I never want to own you, Donna. I always want you to be free to have your own life.
Is that your heart talking or your head?
That's definitely my heart.
Mm. Well, thanks. That's important to me. And what was that?
That'd be my stomach. You want to get something to
eat?
Yeah. Sweet. I like it.
It's super sweet. Great, undeniable chemistry there.
Yeah, I just think it took the heat. It took the prissiness out of the character and made him seem. It feels very real. I mean, again, we strove for emotional reality, and sometimes you get lucky and you hit it really. But that was a really nicely played scene between them. Thank you, Frank Thackeray. You pulled out a good performance out of Joe.
And also Tori is wonderful in that scene as well. I mean, she's just
And Cameron, yeah. I mean, Cameron, you know, is a great pro actor. I think he's got a career going still. And,
but Tori has always got this ability to sort of like, for a super fan of 90210, she suckers you right into she brings you right into her world, her feelings, her emotions. She's just able to bring it all through the screen. I mean, I think it was really nice with her and Joe. Listen to this. Renee says, I'm pretty sure the issue is Jenny related. Now, I don't know what she's talking about. What,
I think
what,
she's referencing the
Tiffany.
Yeah.
Tiffany coming on this podcast?
Yeah, and, you know.
Or claiming any legacy.
Yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to Tiffany not having the best experience in the long run, you know, during and then after the show. And maybe, you know, she just wants to leave things in the past. I don't know.
So I'm just trying to understand the theory here. That there's an issue with Jenny is not on this podcast. Jenny does another podcast called 90210MG, which is a lovely, wonderful podcast. But so why would it be a problem to come on this podcast? I understand why she would not want to go on that podcast if the issue is Jenny related, but what would be the issue coming on this podcast? Sorry, do you have a speculation on that?
I just think they've taken away her ability to enjoy her time on 90210 and celebrate it. It's like toxic for her.
Well, we shouldn't say so, they. It's
her. I don't know why it is, but I assume.
Okay, Renee says no. They were close. She loved the show. It's their relationship now. I love when we try to deduce it like Detective
Columbo. Well, I mean, you know, you have the whole situation with Jenny, then, you know, Brian being an ex. I think it's just a lot of stuff that, you know, maybe
90210 baggage is what.
Yeah, maybe, I guess, in a sense.
Okay.
Hopefully it'll work itself out because
You never know. She's still close with Jason and a few people. Her and Lindsay are really close.
Need a Darren Martin kind of fix here.
Renee says, I think she's worried the press will take it and run with the Jenny stuff.
Probably.
Well, yeah, they would, and they absolutely would.
Yeah, probably.
So. The other thing that's happening in this episode is we see the debut of Prince Carl.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Claire's got this old friend in town. By the way, this is a great, if you're a Claire like I am, this is a lot of great Claire outfits, a lot of great Claire hairstyles. And she brings in this boyfriend who is a prince. So, or this friend that's a prince.
And again, it's another triangle, except it's Steve falling in love with the prince and Claire as his girlfriend. So you've got the other triangle there, because Steve gets totally seduced by the royalty thing in this. And it's great fun to see Ian launch himself into that stuff. It's so good.
Mary B says, I wonder if the audience was hard on her for how dark her character could get, like how they were with Jamie Walters. She's talking about Tiffany now?
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe that that's a thing at all. No.
I think so.
What is the other thing? There's a couple of the things happening. Well, there's this.
You can scream all you want. Nobody's going to hear you.
Tara, why are you doing this?
The sun's going to go down in a couple hours. Isn't the view beautiful?
Tara, you don't want to do this.
I did a lot of reading on suicide. There are so many ways, but I read that carbon monoxide is the most gentle. I bought the hose, found the location. I even measured your tailpipe. I've been planning this for a long time. I don't want you to think this is just because I got mad at you today.
Please, you promised me you wouldn't hurt yourself or me. You don't have to do this.
This isn't gonna hurt. We'll watch the sun set, and when the colors fade, I'll turn on the car. Carbon monoxide will filter in. It'll be gradual. You'll get a little lightheaded. And then we'll fall asleep. Friends forever.
Tara! God, this isn't just for me. It's for you too. Colin hurt you. Valerie. Brandon being with another woman. There's just too much pain. Let's just be quiet.
You know, looking at it now, it's a very good scene, but there's a lack of real coverage in this thing. Like, there should be an overhead shot. There should be other things. There should be a wide shot so we see what they're looking at. It just it looks rushed to me. It looks like they slabbed a side mount on both sides and just kind of went at it. You know, with two cameras.
This is the director who just got a beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, he probably ran out of time in the location. You know, they're losing light or whatever. I have no idea.
He gets a beautiful compliment.
This is what really bothered me. It doesn't build that sequence the way it should. It's
well, you don't even know what. Go ahead. Go ahead,
Brian. What made you want to go the carbon monoxide route, Larry? Where did that come from?
Good question.
Just, you know, again, it seemed like a kind of a gentle way to do it at that time. People do that, you know, in garages and stuff. And it just seemed like we could pull it off. I didn't want to do a gun, you know, thing. It was just too, this way it was kind of, you know, friends forever watching the sunset.
And it was, also, it also buys you time so that the carbon monoxide doesn't actually kill anybody, where a gun, right. That's it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Again, yeah. We must remember what Chip said. Beverly Hills 90210 is a show where things almost happen.
Right. Exactly. Our friend Caitlin says, that's not fair. Valerie saved the show after Brenda left. Tiffany was the only actress on Shannon's caliber. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think they're all very talented. But I do think that Tiffany did some amazing stuff on the show.
She made it very watchable. She was compelling. Her character was compelling because it was unpredictable.
Okay. Tiffany has said she considers 90 their show because she joined late, even though she brought me and a lot of other people in. And to me, 30 years later is a standout. Okay. Lori Ebersol says, OMG, Carl was freaking adorable. So.
Terrific actor. He was on the show. There's an episode you can find that he was on talking about. I think it's the episode we do on the finale. You say it's your birthday. But yeah, he came in. I just thought this was a really, you know, what can be beyond Beverly Hills? Royalty. And then we just start spinning the story with the backstory with Claire's mother. And again, just pulling threads, just trying to keep the emotion and reality real.
Tara and Kelly in the car scene still freaks me out a little. Hi, Thaddy. Hope you're doing good. Amazing performances by both actresses, by the way. Okay. Any questions from Reddit, Brian, that you have that you want any information on?
No, I did ask people, but I didn't get any submissions. I think the subreddit's still reeling a bit from the whole David Gale thing.
Yes. Oh, is that what's going on?
Yeah, we're still getting a lot of that. We're actually, for the discussion this week, we're doing and did it my way in his honor. We're doing
It's great. It's a great episode. I just watched it last night. Okay. Check on Tiff on the Chelsea Handler podcast. She talks about there without naming names. Okay. Well, we'll do an episode where we listen to that podcast.
I love how everybody's
Howard Stern. I think there's a Howard Stern thing.
Oh, well, Renee is now really.
That's the one I know, yeah.
Now Renee's getting into it. So here's what she says. Catherine, she was fine talking 90210 until the drag race thing with Tori and Jenny. FYI, it's since then. Okay.
What's the drag race thing?
I don't know. So, I mean, we'll have to pull that.
Well, I know what they're referencing. They were on that show, RuPaul's Drag Race, as guest judges, and they made what people, I mean, this is, you know, speculation, a comment about Tiffany, where they reference her as she who will remain nameless.
Oh, that's what I used to call Stephanie McMahon. That's what I'm known for. Yeah. No, she who must be obeyed.
Oh, Renee says.
Oh, right. So
yes, Brian.
That's interesting. Okay, I got it.
Okay, so but Tori is a joke. She jokes around about everything. So I think maybe Tiff took this.
I'm pretty sure Tiffany has said she's good with Tori.
Okay. So now we've got it down to a science.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Well, I don't know that there's anything else to cover in this this episode. I think, Brian, did we get all the beats here?
Well, we didn't really go in depth with the whole Steve, you know, going head over heels for Prince Carl.
Yes. He's in love with him.
This is all going to set up for the big, you know, two-hour finale. This is what's going on now. This is really we're getting into May sweeps, and we're gonna have Colin on the run as a fugitive. We're gonna have another triangle with Steve, Claire, and Carl, Prince Carl. You know, we got Brandon and Susan. She took the job, and then we got the Joe, David, and Donna. I mean, so it was all kind of really, you know, we had done our work that year, and we were gonna just harvest all this really good storylines.
In the next episode, Larry, I saw the promo, and there's a thing about Brandon and Susan winning a lottery ticket. This is what they're promoting in the ad. They win a lottery ticket, and it goes bad.
Yeah,
which I know that story, but I'm like, that's the ad, that's the promo, a lottery ticket gone wrong.
Yeah, again, they really let me down, that promo department. They got me, they really hurt me. They just sucked. I mean, I didn't like the promo for this either. I thought that they wasn't good.
Do you remember what the main storyline was for that episode, Larry? Do you remember what the main storyline was for that one, the lottery episode?
That's next. I don't know. No,
the main storyline was that Brandon loses the ticket.
Loses the ticket,
or David loses the ticket, and everyone's pissed off at him.
Is that the main? Colin
is on the run.
Colin,
that's the main thing, and
you know he's forfeited her bail.
Which, like Larry says, I mean, it's baffling why they would pick the lottery thing for a promo when you have the whole Colin, you know, fugitive storyline.
See, the wave says sorry, Steve.
I have to look at it. I really don't remember the episode. I remember thinking I didn't like the episode though, so that much I do remember.
See, the wave says sorry, Steve, but I like Prince Carl's Corvette more. Gotta agree with See the Wave on that too,
Steve. Yes, his 62 Corvette is spectacular. I mean, again, we played that nicely. You know, so what would Steve be impressed with, Dick? Royalty cufflinks, a new Corvette. You know, it's just, and then, you know, him and Carl have this bromance, basically. And it leads to him throwing a party on the Queen Mary, which was great.
Amazing. Thing. And we've covered that here before. Good stuff there. Fernando Losa says, regarding any reason, we need Vanessa Marceau, who played Gina character, and Tiffany, who plays Valerie, both great characters. Great. We need them on the broadcast. Okay, well, just go. And you know what, Fernando?
Why don't you ask her.
Just
I think Zara's friends with Vanessa Marceau.
She said that she's not interested.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is this week. Larry, we don't know what we're covering next week, but I think our friend is back.
Well, Chuck is back. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Chuck had a great time, it looks like, in Europe. He had dinner with Planet 90210 alum Anna Leone, and he also took out for a day and to see a show, Louise Smith in London, another Planet 90210 alum who also played Dylan's mom in a story slam, Dylan's Confession.
Yes.
Great gal. It's so good that Chuck got to see some super fans.
I love when Chuck gets to do this. And he also was reminded to take photographs, which was nice. And he said,
Yes,
it's nice to see that happen. And he'll probably, hopefully, be back next week to cover something with us, I hope.
Yeah. I thought we had something we were going to cover. I can't remember what it was.
I do remember hearing that. Yes. Okay, Brian, I'm sure we'll do some news this week.
Yeah. Okay. We'll figure out a topic.
Yes.
I think it's a spicy topic to cover.
Would you get jealous if your girlfriend or boyfriend, significant other, was in a music video scantily clad? Would you be upset or jealous by them being in the video? How's that?
Yeah. I think a lot of people are going to say it depends on the check.
Larry, good stuff, good vibes for you. Thank you for sharing that Ric Flair story here and the Alec Baldwin one.
Oh, yeah, the Alec Baldwin one, yeah. Again, if you go to the set, bad things happen. That's kind of just
reinforcing. You always have said that.
That's how I was brought up.
Good stuff, though, guys. All right, this has been Beverly Hills 90210 Show. We will be back next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.